Okay, I think Phil, hopefully you'll be joining shortly.
All right, let's kick things off. Hello, everyone. It's one of those Mondays where our times do not align anymore between the Europe and the U.S. March 11th here, we are hosting a weekly community calls of the VCE View Task Force. My name is Simone. I'm one of the co-chairs, and let's kick things off with our housekeeping items. IP note. Most of you would know that these calls are open for everyone to participate in. However, if you are planning to make any substantial contribution, you need to have full IPR agreement signed, and that's easy to do. You can do it on the W3C website. There is a link on the agenda that we send out in the mailing list, and we can maybe drop it in the chat. Call notes. We are recording these meetings. There's an audio and video recording, and we're transcribing, provided that our Robert Orlards play with us. And everything is going to be published in the CCG website online. If you want to participate, and we encourage you to do so, feel free to raise your hand by just clicking the hand button on the toolbar at the bottom of your screen or typing Q+ in the chat, and that will queue you up. Moving on to introductions and reintroductions. I'm looking at the participants here. If there's anyone who wants to reintroduce themselves, or if they're here with us for the first time, please feel free to unmute now and tell a little bit about yourself. If not, I actually see Rob Coyle, if you are here with us, would you mind just quickly saying hello? Maybe later. So no problem. Let's move on to announcement and reminders. This is where we leave space open for anyone to share with the rest of the community any upcoming events or things that have happened that are worthwhile for everyone to know. Please feel free to unmute now and share. Kalia, go ahead. Thank you. Hello.
Hi. I'll just share that we have the Internet Identity Workshop coming up in April from the 16th to the 18th in Mountain View, California. We have the Digital Identity Unconference Europe the 18th to the 20th of June in Zurich. And DID Unconference Africa, the 25th to 27th in South Africa. And we're still finalizing a date for the APAC Digital Identity Unconference in Thailand in January 2025. And all of those are unconferences run the way IIW runs, with the agenda co-created live the day of the event. And our goal is really to support regional conversations that feel like they're needed as the technologies expand and go out into the real world.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Great to see the IIW format kind of going around the world. Highly recommend all those events for everyone that has not participated yet. Great. Thank you. So let's move on to our main topic for today. As announced, we wanted to debrief from last week's OneITech Digital Credentials Summit and share in this particular forum some of the insights or takeaways for people that have participated. Now, the reason for that is that in the last several months, the convergence between OneITech open badges and W3C verifiable credentials has been forefront to our conversations. So the version 3 of open badges, which is a standard stewarded by OneITech, is now a verifiable credential. that is awesome. And there's work ongoing in both communities. And so, that is why we feel that an update on what's happening in Lana Tech is due and beneficial for this community. With that said, I wanted to invite Phil Long, if he's here yet, to kick things off, as he was also a participant there. Sorry, I'm not keeping up with the participants. Is Phil with us yet? Maybe not. So let me get started then, because I was there, and one of the things that I wanted to certainly flag is sort of this current work around learning employment records, which is the high level framing of in the conceptual framing of technical specifications that are built both at Wanted Tech and when it comes to the payload of these educational and employment credentials, as well as W3C. And this was probably the first meeting where Open Badges 3 and CDR2, which are the two specs from Wanted Tech that are, you know, being wrapped into verifiable credentials, where full front and you know, being discussed across different sections. And it feels like work is still happening, but there is high expectations, but also many questions around what will take to move from one version to the next. A lot of conversations are happening within the Wanted Tech Digital Credentials Working Group in terms of what is the impact of looking at the specifications coming from W3C, particularly when it comes to the cryptographic signing of these credentials. So that's still very much a discussion point. The other thing that I was personally involved in has to do with looking at the increasing amount of guidance that is coming from different micro-credentials framework around the globe. Credential Engine has taken an initiative to spin up a mapping initiative that is leveraging Credentials Engine's own version of the data ecosystem schema mapper, which is an open source tool that was developed with different kind of funding, but stewarded by the T3 Innovation Network first. So Credential Engine is, using their own instance of the data ecosystem schema mapper to start to crosswalk different ontologies like the European Learning Model or the specification like Open Badges 3, Open Badges version 2.1, and in the future, more national specific specifications around micro-credentials framework. For example, in the pipeline, there is a mapping between the Australian National Micro-credentials framework and the rest of the existing specifications in an effort to make sense and create linking between the different definitions of micro-credentials. The contribution to this work, or the opportunity to create convergence, and do good work in the ecosystem comes from the fact that Wanted Tech also, unveiled at this summit, the Wanted Tech Trusted Micro-credentials Framework, which is an effort to look at the existing metadata inside Open Badges 3, suggest which one of these data elements or metadata elements should be mandatory or optional, as well as providing guidance around extending the specification. So that emergent framework for Wanted Tech, for which Wanted Tech is going to also offer certification, is certainly an interesting contribution to that should be mapped at global level. So this idea of keeping tabs on the different requirements around data elements for micro-credentials is clearly being addressed by different organizations like Credential Engine and OneAttack, and was one of the topics in the sessions, but also in the conversations around last week. So let me stop here for a second and ask if anyone has kind of any questions or... Yes, Dimitri, please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Simone, for the recap. A couple of questions. One is about the trusted metadata project that you mentioned at the end. Is that sort of in addition to the required fields Open Badges spec has right now?
No, there is no addition in terms of data requirements. My sense is that the focus of the first part of this work has been to provide guidance around whether those metadata elements are going to be mandatory or optional. That is also, I want to also make sure to say that this is an initiative that just started. So the OneAttack unveiled this particular project and called for participation.
I see.
So there is a way to engage, and I'm hoping that people in this community would connect with it for sure.
Got it. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Okay. And then my other question was, you mentioned employment records. So, which has been definitely on my mind as I'm involved in a couple of projects that are data modeling, sort of verifiable employment credentials. And so my question is, has there been much conversation about the employment side of things rather than the traditional education side that OneAttack engages in?
Yes, there has been a lot of focus in looking at credentials from the employer side, particularly articulating the need for employers to, you know, engage and understand and understand what digital credentials mean. But I would say that these conversations have not been technical or getting into the weeds of what is, for example, a data model that they would recognize. So mostly presentations are around the share, the co-design of learning experiences that would be credentialed and accepted on the employer side, or more high level conversation articulating the need to bring the employers closer to the conversations or engagement, which, you know, is certainly stuff that, you know, we all know already. But for this particular, for the technical angle, there wasn't that much introduced that we don't already know. In fact, I think there is a lot of work that we could also do in this community around the E in LER, or so the employment records, and what do payloads would look like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be really helpful of us here at VC Edu to at least start discussing, if not even data modeling, some verifiable employment examples, taking a look at some of the older diff work that LinkedIn may or may not be also using, some of like the schema.org approach, the HR open LERRS approaches to employment credentials, and so on. Yeah, so that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to in this community.
I think it's important to recognize that OneAttack, you know, is clearly an organization that is plugged in into this space. Probably, you know, it's actually laser focused on it, and has been able to maintain a very healthy community of adopters around their standards, particularly Open Badges and increasingly CLR. So it would be important to maintain these relationships. And although some of us do participate in the OneAttack working groups that are open to members of OneAttack, I, as a note to self, I think extending the invitation to WannaTech folks to come and share in this community would be great. In fact, probably in the next time slot, we'll have Xavi Aravil, who's the one of the architects of the CLR and Open Badges stack, to be able to come on and share a bit more where that kind of work is at.
Gillian in chat, or Gillian, in chat mentioned that the UK NHS data schema ecosystem may have verify employment and reference credentials, schemas. So that'll be really interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if, just taking off that tangent a little bit, anyone here is aware of sources of employment, credentials, schemas, just like Gillian has mentioned. And if you did, just feel free to mention it right now, or do know that that is a focus that, as co-chairs, we're thinking about bringing into this community. As we feel we have not done enough on that employment record side, and that is increasingly important for us to be able to bridge the gap between employment, you know, learning and employment, let's say.
Anybody else? Any other questions about the WannaTech conversation? Alternatively, if you're working on a project that is interested in verified employment, verified resumes, that sort of thing, please hop on a queue. Tell us about it. It's good to hear feedback and other voices on the topic. Colin, go ahead.
Hello, hello. Thanks for calling that out explicitly, Dimitri. Most directly, the LERRS, the resume standard that OpenHR has been working on, I think is of interest to some of our employer partners through, you know, there's a lot of conversation, at least in the States, around skills first hiring and skills first practices, to remove, specifically to remove the degree requirement from a lot of application processes. I think something in this whole conversation around digital credentials and LERs that arises for employers is sort of a standard or way they can think about the next iteration. And the irony is not lost on me when they ask about a standard for something, even though they use a self-created resume currently, but the LERRS, the resume standard, I think is growing in interest. And Smart Resume is a partner that we work with who has basically a version of that can present verified credentials with the verification layer baked in, but can also export as a PDF for, you know, traditional hiring processes. But it proposes to plug into any system and offer representation of those verified credentials in one vehicle. And I know they've participated in, you know, the PugFest of the past, but I think that's an area where we're seeing a lot of interest from partners in our projects. And we have sort of two projects. One's called The Last Mile to Hire that we have, I've mentioned here before, but we are looking at a next phase of that would engage employers more directly in that hiring process. So we've gone through an understand phase with some big employers in the States to understand what those challenges and obstacles are to adopting credentials in the hiring process, in upskilling. And so I think having some kind of standard or some kind of signal, at least for them, strengthens the argument or the presentation of all these digital artifacts in that process. Now, whether or not their HR systems can accept credentials and unpack the data that's inside of them is a separate question, but at least showing the layer of verification and showing this, that skills and other attestations have been validated through the, whether it's working, you know, the experience they have as an employee, or it's experiences that they're gaining through non-degree or non-credit courses, has the interest there has really increased, at least with the partners we've been talking to. So all that to say, a standard, the LERRS, is really valuable and helpful to signal to, because really a lot of these groups want to see something that is simple and easy that, that contains all of this stuff. So that's just a little update on some of the projects we're at, and happy to talk more with anyone who is interested in that side of the work and have some insight reports that I'm happy to share if people are interested.
Amazing. Thanks, Colin. Gillian, I wonder if you wanted to jump in and share a bit more about the comment that you had.
Can you hear me? Okay.
We can, yes. And how do we pronounce your name again?
It's Gillian.
Gillian, got it. Yeah,
it's an unusual name, a place in Cornwall in the UK.
Ah, right on.
Yeah, nice to meet you all. So I'll try and be brief. Basically, in the NHS, which is the National Health Service in the UK, we're looking to create a digital staff passport, which is a digital wallet, which will hold verifiable credentials. It's already public beta now. And the idea is to get healthcare professionals onto the ward working. The first phase of the project is about pre-employment checks, which includes right to work checks, criminal record checks, identity checks, employment checks, and there's some more. And then there's other checks that they do, which are statutory mandatory training they have to do, education checks, which is why I sort of joined this forum in the first place. And then ultimately, it's all about access to locations and systems so that they can work on the ward. In the UK, we have about 10,000 different legal entities that doctors and healthcare professionals can move between each time they have a legal obligation to do a lot of these checks. When you have doctors in training or postgraduate training as part of their work in hospitals, they have to move between, you know, 4 month stints where they move between different hospitals to get their training. And each time they need a reference you know, historically, it's taken a long time for consultants to provide references to the doctors in training. And sometimes they can't remember because there might be 50 or 60 per sort of rotation. And then the doctors come back and ask 4 months down the line, they can't remember. So one of the most important ones was this reference. So it's very much in this context within the NHS. However, because we have to employ people from outside of the UK and ultimately who go and work elsewhere, it's both public and private sector. So it's a lot to talk about, but I just wanted to give you a quick update, and I'll share. We're publishing takes a long time. It's public sector. So we published our trust framework with all the data specifications for all of the verifiable credentials that we have currently. And they should be available very soon. It's taken about 3 years to actually get them published. But a quick update. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Gillian. Quick question. Is this project related to the to some of the solid pod initiatives NHS was?
No, it's separate from that. So this is all about digital wallets and verifiable credentials, not solids, not
Got it. And is it targeting a mobile wallet or a web-based wallet?
Mobile. It's okay. Very much focused on the mobile at the moment. As you're aware, the NHS is allegedly the fifth largest employer in the world. So there's lots of different entities who have different initiatives across it. But we're working with NHS England, which is the one that comes directly from the Department of Health down. So That's what it's doing. Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah. Please keep us updated on how that goes. I think a lot of us here would be really interested in that project.
I will. Thanks.
Yeah. Whenever that report is published, if it is soon, as you said, would love to have you back, and maybe you can walk us through that particular publication. Great. Okay, so I thinking back to the One at Tech conference again, there was another topic that I wanted to share here, and it has to do with interoperability or portability of the credentials. So historically, within the One at Tech spectrum of standards, particularly around open badges, portability of one open badge from one platform to another. So this is platform portability was addressed by version 2.1 of the open badges spec, something called Badge Connect. So Badge Connect was rehashed again, revisited, and it's how, for example, you would be able to import a Canvas credential badge into a Credly backpack. So that is the way badges have, you know, supposedly fully become interoperable. But we do know that in the verifiable credential space, that portability is resolved in another way. Or verifiable presentation is what allows you to curate a set of credentials and present them in another context, I mean, outside of your wallet. So I do think that work needs to be done to reconcile, you know, what portability really means in the Open Badges version 3 scenario as badges become verifiable credentials. Because ultimately that is one of the key things that we're trying to solve for, portability, across platforms or across wallets. So there is work still happening around badges, Open Badges version 2.1, again, Badge Connect. But I do wonder, and this is my question that I, you know, take back from the event, you know, how might we work as two communities around this notion of credentials portability?
So can you say more? Portability in what sense?
So again, I would frame it as platform portability. So it used to be that the different platforms in market that issue open badges, say Credly or Credible, Open Badge Factory, would allow you to issue open badges that would live in a so-called backpack or the, you know, the artist, you know, the wallet is the artist, formerly known as the backpack. And so, but it was not really possible until version 2.1 of the Open Badges spec. If you were on a Credly instance, if you were a Credly user, you could not import into your backpack or wallet a credential issued by another platform, which kind of defeated the point of portability. So it was siloing platforms. Now Badge Connect solves for that. And so you could collect badges issued by through different platforms in one backpack. But that is, again, platform to platform portability. I think when we look at the issue from a verifiable credential standpoint, you know, we don't, you know, anymore, we no longer speak about Badge Connect with Open Badges version 3, because those are credentials that would live ideally in a wallet or in any wallet. And so, and learners could decide where to move them around, you know, provided there is interoperability between a wallet, say in the, you know, OIDC, you know, exchange protocol, or Chappie. So this is one of the challenges that I think Open Badges version 3 poses. And it is to do with portability of credentials issued by one platform. They should all be able to be downloaded into an Edge wallet without issues. So I think that is, for example, one topic that Chavi from OneNet Tech will be able to tell us a bit more, likely starting at 5 p.m. Central European time.
Yeah, I'm curious about what OneNet Tech is going to do with their Badge Connect as well, because I think the overall verifiable credential ecosystem has standard portability protocols like the OpenID and VCAPI family of protocols. So I think the larger community is just not familiar with the Badge Connect API. And given that OneNet Tech Open Badges and CLR version 2 have moved to verifiable credentials on the data model, there's no real reason for them not to embrace the verifiable credential protocols as well, right? Like, if you're a new developer or new implementer, entering into the badge space, is there any incentive to implement the Badge Connect API? I think that'll be one of the main questions for OneNet Tech to sort of sort out an answer.
Yeah. By the way, I did drop a link to a presentation about the Badge Connect API in the chat. So that was something that is dated now, so it precedes Open Badges version 3 conversation, but hopefully it explains a bit more what that was, what it was meant to do. And yeah, so it's an open question on how OneNet Tech will be able to take in also this new paradigm of exchanging credentials or giving portability to credentials and see what it means for Badge Connect particularly. Okay, I reckon that this is a lot of the people that were at the event are going to join in 20 minutes, so I'm not asking for anyone to stay longer, but certainly as a flag, we need to resolve the timing of this call for the next couple of weeks until March 31st to make sure that we have the community showing up at the same time. We'll figure that out and we'll let you know.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so we can wrap up this call early. Although there's something else we wanted to at least start the conversation about, and that is the scribing aspect of our calls. So the chairs have been talking about, is it time to consider other scribing alternatives, right? For those unfamiliar, CCG, I would say as a couple of years ago, used to scribe its calls manually, right? So there's always at the beginning of every call, the dreaded call for scribes, which is a mixed blessing. It's always hard to do. And sometimes the transcription quality is uneven, but at least you've got a human on the transcribing end and the notes are pretty good. Given the scribe selection difficulty, CCG has moved towards this current transcriber technology, which is locally hosted and I believe uses like a free Google API to do the voice recognition. So the current infrastructure is sort of evolved this way due to privacy and open source concerns on the part of the group members. But we wanted to restart the conversation and start getting a sense from the audience of, if we switch to something like Otter AI or another transcription service, would anybody have strong objections to that? would it be a deal breaker for anyone? So if you have thoughts on this, please hop on the queue. Ildiko, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to, first of all, welcome this initiative. Of course, we talked about this. I'm one of those three chairs. But being a relatively newcomer to the whole infrastructure, I really very instantly noticed that the transcription is not very good. And when I asked what the reason is for this, I received the same explanation. So from my side, as a newcomer who doesn't have the kind of tunnel vision or just being familiar with the status quo, I would most definitely support trying to find the most more efficient version and a more inclusive version that recognizes everybody's voice, if possible. You know that this does not apply to everybody. So just want to give a plus one to change. And that's my personal opinion.
Thank you so much, Ildiko. Anyone else?
I think Colin wanted to contribute.
Oh, that's weird. I maybe forgot to take my name out of there, but we use it all the time internally for a lot of our team meetings, and some of the reports are super valuable, especially for like quick summaries of meetings, right? As opposed to reading through the whole transcript. I think some of the summaries that it provides are pretty great. So all in favor.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin. And sorry for putting you on the spot there, but yeah. Anyone else?
Most importantly, does anybody else have strong objections? All right, that's good to know. It's a good data point. We'll also kick up this conversation on the mailing list and in the call in 15 minutes. But this is a great initial polling.
And personally, our transcriber doesn't really like me, so it never picks up what I say. So I feel a little bit neglected, but.
Which is, yeah, that's not good at all. And I think it didn't catch Ildiko either. Yeah, it didn't transcribe when Ildiko was speaking. So there's definitely weird network partition stuff going on. That would be good to smooth out. All right, shall we adjourn for a few minutes before doing another call for the Europeans? Okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Sorry for the time zone blues here. We'll fix it. We'll communicate via the mailing list what is the final hour for next Monday.
All right. Cheers, all.
See you in 15. Bye.
Hello, friends. Thanks for joining us. This is a special edition of our task force meeting, as it happens. Our world has shifted in time in some parts, in some regions. And so what happened is that today we have been hosting two calls. One just happened an hour ago. Most of our U.S. colleagues that have calendar invites have followed it, as we all should do. And so we are split into groups. But fear not, because actually most of the contributions that we planned for today around the One Ed Tech Summit that happened last week will happen here, as colleagues that participated are here with us. So just give us a second as we get started. And thank you for being here. Phil, did you want to do an audio check? Could you come in? Is anyone hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. I suspect Phil is fixing. Phil Long just joined a second ago.
I did indeed. Can you hear me?
Right. Yeah. Yep. Loud and clear, sir. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and get us started and record this meeting. Or it's recording already, actually. So it has been recording since before. That's great. Okay, so without further ado, let's go through the housekeeping items and kick it off. Give me a second. All right, good Monday, everyone. Today is March 11th, and we are gathering with our weekly call of the Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force. My name is Simone. I'm one of the co-chairs together with Ildiko and Dimitri. And today, the main topic of our conversation will be a debrief from the One Ed Tech Digital Credentials Summit that happened last week. But before we do that, let us get things in order and go through the IP note first. So these calls are open for anyone to participate in. However, if you are planning to make any substantial contribution, you need to have full IPR agreements signed. And those could be found online, and we'll drop a link in the chat for you to consider that. That link is also distributed with the agenda of this call. So please do review that. Moving on to call notes. We are recording these meetings, audio and video, and we also have a transcriber, which doesn't like me that much, so it's not transcribing my voice. But as you will speak, you'll see it coming into the chat. In order to contribute, which we encourage, you can either raise your hand and push the button on the lower bar of your screen, or type Q+ in the chat and we'll queue you up. And that's it for call notes. We normally do introductions and reintroduction at this point. So if there's anyone here with us that has not been on the call yet, please feel free to quickly open your mic and introduce yourself. Only if you want to, and you might have an opportunity to do that even later during the call if you want to contribute. So that's all good. I'm going to move us onward and open up for an opportunity to the community to share any announcements and reminders. These are typically a space where we talk about what's coming in terms of events or what might have happened. So if you have anything to flag to this group, please
I do so now. Okay, let's just jump into the main topic for today, which is a debrief on the One Tech Digital Credentials Summit. Some of us were there in person. I see a few of us here. So I would like to ask Phil Long to kick us off with some of his reflections, and then we can have a chat about it, and certainly invite anyone else that has any comments to share out. So, Phil, thank you for being there last week and for offering to contribute.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, and it was great to see so many people present and the variety of different folks representing organizations all gathering around digital credentials in New Orleans, which was lovely, actually. So Simone asked me to make a brief statement about the summary observations that occurred to me there, and hopefully others will chime in as we go along. So I'll make a couple. The first I will comment on is the continuing confusion over terminology around LERs and LERVCs and micro-credentials and et cetera, et cetera. It remains an issue for us all. And I have to say part of the confusion stems from the introduction of LERs back in 2000, thereabouts, when a White House sponsored workforce group coined that term as part of the American Workforce Policy Board, which was led effectively by the Department of Commerce Secretary and had representatives from a number of other government agencies as well as others. And the term came from an attempt to represent those types of credentials which had both value in identifying assertions about learning and value in identifying assertions about a person's work skills and or position in an organization. And it was meant to be a category as opposed to a specification. So lots of things could potentially fall into that if it were a credential that had something to do with the person's background in learning and something to do with the person's background in work. But the confusion persists at this point in time. It might be helpful to simply say that there are all kinds of credentials. Credential is another term which is, relatively speaking, covering a wide range of things, from certificates to diplomas to decrees to licenses, et cetera. And in fact, credentials aren't limited to things in this domain of education and work. There are credentials associated with supply chains and agricultural products, and et cetera. One of the things I think that is most challenging that we have to understand is that at the present time, the VC that's defined as a specification by the W3C for the verifiable credential is basically an interoperability specification. And as such, it does not specifically define the payload in terms of domain-related metadata, only defines it sufficient to make sure that there is guaranteed interoperability. And the reason I think that's confusing is because there aren't other credentials defined in the conformant with the verifiable credential in the education space, except the two that One EdTech has taken on, the OBV3 and the CLRV2. And those two credentials are compliant with W3C and very specific for the domain in which they are describing different sorts of credential types, including a credential for a degree, for a certificate, for a license, and a variety. I think if I recall correctly, there's something like 30 plus different types of credentials within the OBV3, for example. So there are only, as far as I know, two credentials that exist that are very specific to a given domain that are VCs. And that comes up when someone says, well, I'd like a VC, for example, and Dimitri has encountered this recently, to represent the person's being a part of a business organization as an employee. And where is the template for that? And the answer is there isn't. There is a design that ensures that if a template is created, it can be interoperable if it conforms to W3C VC's interoperability standard, but nothing very specific that says these are the things that need to be there to define a person who is a member of an organization. And that's true across the board at present. And one of our challenges is actually to create sets of credentials and put them someplace, perhaps in a registry, where those things exist, so that people can draw from them. So that was one observation. The second I'll say is that one of the things that we seem to still not have clearly defined well, or at least put emphasis on, is the association of evidence in a credential with an assertion associated with it. And by evidence, I mean performative, demonstrable activity the person who is the credential subject was awarded and to whom the credential was awarded that demonstrates their claim with whatever that claim is for some third party to be able to judge for themselves, at least in some fashion, that they are able to perform whatever it is the claim is about. And I think that we don't have enough about that at this point in time. And finally, I'll just leave a question about, I know that there was a number of such presentations at this meeting about Badge Connect, and I will leave it to Rob and or Javi to talk about that. But it's interesting to me that Badge Connect is a platform-related protocol, and we are moving towards the decentralized protocol where individuals hold credentials and wallets and such, and that platforms, while they continue to be an important interim technology at this stage, aren't that the mechanism for transfer of credentials from one point to another in the VC world with respect to W3C VCs is through another set of protocols, whether it's Open Badge Connect protocol suite, the VP API protocol suite, and emerging hopefully soon the Anon Cred for protocol suite. So we have sort of an interim thing there that probably also needs to have some clarification around it. And with that, I'm hoping that OneEdTech Rob and Javi can talk a little bit also about the trusted credential or trusted micro credential task force that's in place. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Phil, for instigating the conversation. And we definitely have people here that could discuss. I wanted to just flag, you know, one aspect of the first point that you made. So while open badges are that one, say, global specifications for payloads, learning and employment records, I do feel that in Europe, the European learning model might be brought in as an ontology that helps specify a similar payload. So I wonder whether, you know, Ildiko, you want to jump in on that, and certainly Xavi, you also plug that in. But I know Ildiko, you presented on this. So would you feel that is that ELM is another type of like payload representation that we have that should be listed?
Well, ELM is definitely a very versatile schema that can be used creatively to represent and detail various different claims about an individual, and that could be about learning as well as employment. To go into details, that is probably something that is more of a discussion point rather than a presentation point. We already had internal discussion, so it's not something that you can force feed.
Great. Yeah, so that's important. And we definitely see the contribution to our ecosystem coming from North America and Europe in terms of
data models for learning and employment records. If you know of any others, please feel free to share. But those are two that we've been talking about, and they're on, are under our radar. So great. That said, I wonder if anyone has any reactions to the 3 points made by Phil. Please feel free to jump in or get into. While you think about that, I just have so one on Badge Connect and just a similar way to resolving portability in the VC paradigm, the new VC paradigm. So I wonder, you know, as we move into Open Badges version 3, you know, what might be the open items that we need to address when it comes to providing that portability layer across platforms, and how does that change when we introduce wallets in the mix? And I do think that this community and the One at Tech Digital Credential Work Group are two opportunities and for us to be able to unpack that eventually. So that is certainly something that, you know, maybe Chavi, you could tell us a bit more in a second. On the evidence side, yeah, there's never enough of that. I feel I'd like to do justice and mention the work that Edelex is doing in Australia. That is definitely a time zone that we can never get to. But Edelex has been laser focused on really just this niche of attaching evidence to credentials. And they've also been very active in the Open Skills Network around expressing skills definition in a richer way with rich skills descriptors. So that is something worth flagging, but that is an area where we want to be able to be as expressive as possible when it comes to credentials. You know, although they are verifiable, what else? I mean, how could we add signaling power of credentials with added evidence? And the good thing is that with this spec, Open Badges already provide for that. So thanks a lot, Phil. I see Uliko, you're on the queue. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's another question that I think is worth asking is what we mean by evidence, because evidence on one hand is obviously the individual's attachable evidence of an achievement, but evidence, the way we interpret it in ELM and European Digital Credentials for Learning, is that the issuing organization who takes the legal responsibility of making a claim, they are attaching this, or they are themselves, and their signature is the evidence that of the claim that they make about the individual. So it's a statement about the individual's achievements or the skills and competencies acquired or strengthened during employment. And that does not necessitate, when we're talking about the employment as experiences, as a tangible evidence of what a person has learned. I don't know if it makes sense.
Thank you, Uliko, for sure. Chavi, thank you very much for putting yourself on the queue. Go ahead. Please do introduce yourself briefly as well.
Oh, yeah, very briefly. Hello, I'm Chavi Rathil. I'm the technical standard architect for digital credentials in One at Tech, basically related to Open Badges, CLR, and also CASE. I was just to jump in order to say that the evidence is basically the main difference between Open Badges and ELM, because we treat it as a demonstration for the individual to the achievement of the claims, whether ELM, as Ildiko said, uses evidence as another way to store or the evidence for the issuer. This was the result of, I think it was a mapping exercise we did. It was September, in Nottingham, in Learning Impact Europe conference with, I think it was Anthony. It was, we met with Anthony Camalieri, and we met this, and other colleagues like Ronald Hamm from SURF, who is doing this kind of mapping exercise to see if there is a way to not only convert, but also express the same credentials in both payload formats, like open batches and CLR. The other parts, we have semantically the same meaning, but we use different fields inside the credential subject part of the verifiable credentials to express that. Regarding the Batch Connect, yeah, Batch Connect is something that came from Open Batches 2. In fact, it's Open Batches 2.1 because it's the only addition we made to the plain Open Batches was at the transport layer using the API. And it's something we inherited for the previous version of that spec. As Open Batches 3 and CLR2 aligns to W3C verifiable credential, yeah, they can be a part of the other existing APIs out there. Like you may, I think Phil mentioned it before, OpenAD for VC, Chappie, VC Edu API. I think it's compatible to use that. So there is nothing from any individual to present an open batch or CLR using the same APIs they use to present another type of credential. What we focus on is the change of credentials between platforms, and it's basically into the educational domain. I think it's more focused for organizations who want to move their credential platform from one vendor to the other, rather than the ultimate usage of the user, because the user will have a wallet in their phone, and we use the more broader ways to manage that credentials. What Batch Connect provides is the freedom for the new user and institutions to move from one platform to the other.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I only one addition. Yeah, I ran different sessions in this DC summit. One of them was a technical introduction to verifiable credentials. And I think that 90% of the audience was non-technical people, which means basically it was like 35, 40 people, and 30 was not technical. In fact, I was asked before the session if the session will be too technical to leave. That means two things. First is the great interest all the institution has in this domain. And the other is that we still have work to educate, I think mostly institutions, university, college, to the benefits of this new type of expressing credentials.
Let me ask you a question about that. So what is your takeaway or your feeling from the questions in the room? You know, people that are non-technical showing up to a presentation around, you know, verifiable credentials and badges. What is the main questions that they come with?
So they want to know how to express the skills and competencies. So we know that, in open batches, we do it through alignment, which basically it's a link to a whatever competency or skill frameworks you may have in your institution or company or workforce related. So how the other is I think that they are starting to work on it. So it's not something that will happen in the future. It's happening right now, and they want to start working on that, and they want to have the knowledge and all the possibilities that we provide to them.
Thank you very much. And so you've run a workshop, so you were busy in the room.
I'm sorry, and I'm afraid that I lost most of the sessions because I have to run some of them.
No, thank you for doing that. I wonder if there are any other insights or thoughts, both from being in the room and running the sessions, but also picking up conversations in the coffee breaks that you take away.
In terms of yeah, more internally, like in related to Open Badges 3 and CLR2, we are work. I heard a lot of people start implementing and try to certify to it. So I received several inquiries regarding to certification. I don't know if Rob Coyle is also a colleague of mine that it's here. I don't know if he wants to add something more non-technically focused.
Hey, Charlie, thanks. You know, I think the big takeaway around some of this non-technical stuff is, for me, was, you know, I don't think this is news to anyone here. I believe Carrie even posted this on LinkedIn that, you know, verifiable credentials is lowercase verifiable credentials is not the same here. And I still think there's a lot of confusion out there trying to understand, same with CLR. And so a lot of the non-technical conversations, other than the big picture, of what we can do, has really been around just educating people around some of these, the differences. Sorry, I'm also looking at some stuff in the chat.
So. You're fine, Rob. I think Phil was queuing up a question around the trusted micro-credential framework, which, you know, you can then go into, but feel free to finish up.
Sure. No, that's okay. I can go ahead and transition to that if that's okay.
Sure.
So the Trusted Micro-Credential Coalition is a WannaTech initiative amongst many of our members. And this comes out of conversations that we had last year around how can we help to address the feedback that we're hearing from employers and from other higher ed institutions around understanding the context of what a credential really means. You know, the feedback, and we've all heard this too, I'm sure, is we've got credentials out there. Not a lot of organizations are accepting those credentials or understand what to do with those credentials when it comes to employment or hiring someone or transferring between education institutions. And a lot of that has to do with how the credential is created and the data that goes into the credential, right? The feedback is the context is often missing. People don't understand the quality of the program or the rigor that went into it. Evidence is a good opportunity there to provide context. So what we did is we formed a coalition in the fall, and we began to tackle this problem. And at the summit last week, we rolled out an initial draft of a framework which attempts to identify pieces of existing metadata that is in the Open Badge standard right now, but is optional. And we tried to put some guardrails around making some of those optional fields required or recommended, or we put some guidelines into what kind of data should be in there. And ultimately, we landed on sort of three big buckets of credentials. One is more the open recognition, the membership, it can be anything. And then we defined these two other buckets, one around application and the other around knowledge. And we structured some of the or identified some of the metadata fields as required for each of those two larger buckets. So that's where the coalition is to date. The next part of the initiative will be, I think, twofold. One, kind of diving in a little bit more around what those, you know, what that looks like in the actual specification, you know, kind of linking theory to practice, as well as also looking at how we might be able to certify platforms, but also institutions who are creating these credentials to ensure that the metadata is there when required.
Thank you, Rob. Any other high-level takeaways from the whole event, since you put a lot of effort into designing it and delivering it?
Sure. Well, you know, if we're talking about the whole event, let me just start off by thanking everyone on this call who was able to participate. I think it was a very exciting week, a lot of energy in the room. We had a lot of opportunities to get down into some really big conversations around how we can, you know, roll this out in a way that's meaningful for learners. We have a lot of technical conversations, but there's a lot more to do in terms of the adoption of credentials. And I think last week really provided a lot of opportunity to discuss that, to align on some potential ways to move forward to promoting and supporting our learners and students as well. And I mentioned this just because it was such a big takeaway for me, but some wonderful conversations around the opportunity of credentials in supporting equity and helping to serve some of those traditionally underserved populations. So that was a really meaningful set of conversations for me on Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Rob. And let me add a tiny bit to the presentation of the Trusted Micro-Credentials Framework by OneEdTech, which I think is very much necessary amidst an abundance of data requirements around micro-credentials that we are seeing coming toward us in different forms. Some of these forms have to do with national micro-credentials frameworks, like in Australia and in Europe, for example. And one parallel initiative that that we talked about at the summit was the Credential Engine Global Micro-Credentials Mapping exercise that Deb mentioned here in the chat, and she dropped the link for it. And it goes really well hand in hand with the OneEdTech micro-credentials framework, as it is an opportunity to use open source tools, this one in particular called the Data Ecosystem Schema Mapper, to crosswalk different specifications around data elements for micro-credentials emerging from different regions of the world. So this is an ongoing process. It started with using CTDL as a spine for this mapping, the Credential Transparency Description Language, and then the European Learning Model was mapped to it. Open Badges version 2 and 3 was also mapped, and we're looking at adding the Australian Micro-Credentials Framework data requirements to it, as well as the OneEdTech Trusted Micro-Credentials Framework. So while there has been a challenge, defining a universal meaning for micro-credential in the definition has been challenging. I think if we can look beyond the definition into the data, we may be able to achieve further transparency and portability of these data elements. So that is another great initiative that I think supports this notion of needing to do work in at the data layer when it comes to micro-credentials. And so that was another things that I wanted to flag. Okay, so those were some of the highlights from OneEdTech, which, by the way, still is the reference event for digital credentials in education, or LERs, worldwide. There's also a European version of it, but this is definitely well attended, and the agenda was jam-packed with great presentations. So hopefully we were able to provide some of the highlights. I wonder if anyone here in the room has specific questions around what we shared so far, wants to unpack, or maybe as other impending questions that we could address. Okay, and that's fine. Rob, maybe just a follow-up questions on the micro-credentials framework. What is the next steps? I mean, what should we be looking out for from that initiative? Is there a way to engage?
So, great question. I'll backstep half a second and just say that as part of the work that went into the initial draft, we did look at a lot of other work that was being done. I know certainly the ELM and the Australia framework were things that we just very quickly kind of, okay, we were aware of it. We also looked at a lot of the other work that was happening with a lot of higher ed institutions, and we tried to make sure that when we were doing this work, that we were not doing something that was completely contradictory to other work that was out there. We tried to, you know, do a broad sweep and make sure that, you know, people could see how their work relates to this work. We weren't trying to reinvent the wheel. We were just trying to provide an opportunity for us to, you know, answer some specific questions, but within the one ed tech swim lane, right? We weren't trying to put out a new definition of micro credentials or anything broad like that. So the coalition right now is made up of contributing members from within one ed tech. We started with a small group. We're starting to expand that a little bit further so that we can kind of define what these next steps are in terms of, you know, how do we make sure that the framework we put out, you know, is clear in implementation guidance? How can we ensure that we can provide that quality assurance to suppliers or to education institutions that their credentials are needing this? So that, you know, the next steps really are kind of to continue the work of the coalition to define it. I'm hoping that we'll, you know, be able to make some big progress between now and the One Ed Tech Learning Impact Conference coming up in the first part of June. And we'll be able to roll out some additional updates at that time. And I would say that, you know, the idea of us including, you know, information, right, obviously isn't new. We're seeing some great comments in the chat there with links to the ELM model. I think we can continue to synergize with each other's work. And, you know, I hope, like I said, we'll provide an update of where we are at the Learning Impact Conference. And then we'll look at, you know, broader, what could broader adoption look like? Where are the ways that we can even just advocate for inclusion of key items like evidence or, you know, endorsements or things like that? So, you know, One Ed Tech, we want to look at not just the framework itself, but also how we can advocate for the components of the framework. Because again, ultimately, we all believe that this is what is going to help learners.
Thank you so much for adding this reflection, Rob. Again, great work, and I look forward for the opportunity to for the two communities to keep more intentionally in touch. I mean, the members of the community are shared across the Digital Credential Working Group at One Ed Tech and this, and the natural way of, I think, representing this relationship, this complementary relationship, is to look at One Ed Tech as really being inside the payloads or the semantics or the, you know, making of the meaning and understanding the credentials and what they mean with the metadata work on open badges and CLR, and verifiable credentials really coming to support when it comes to the portability and the transport of the credentials, adding, you know, a touch of privacy preserving tech to it. And so it's that, you know, old analogy of the envelope and the letter inside. So it looks like there are exciting opportunities for us to keep in touch and continue to work together. So thank you very much for joining us here today. We look forward to, you know, be able to do some excellent work together in the future still. So thank you, Xavi and Rob, for being here.
Oh, our pleasure, and thanks for the opportunity. And yes, I think there's a lot of opportunity to keep the two groups here in step with each other, and I welcome that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
And Xavi, just for, as I remember, we were having a conversation around the event in Europe. Would you share the date again? When is One Ed Tech
happening? Yeah. Yeah, so One Ed Tech has a yearly conference in Europe. We made it last year in Nottingham in the UK. This year is in October 9th to October 11th in Barcelona, in my hometown. So if you are around, let me just put the link here very quickly. Yeah. So yeah, it's in October. It's more broader than not just digital credentials. It covers all the work related within one spec. The one tech, sorry, but for sure digital credentials will have some sessions in the track.
Great. Dimitri, Liko, do you have any thoughts you want to share or drop in?
I was leaving messages in the chat, actually, because it was really nice to hear and be on the same page about the terminology, clarifications, and the continued cooperation, because indeed we have the same issue when it comes to how do you make sure that you encourage the improvement of credential quality. In the meantime, you're not forcing something that not every use case can comply with. So it's no coincidence that in our model, there's only a handful of compulsory properties to describe a credential or a claim. But when we define a particular type of claim or credential, such as a micro-credential, we kind of get to the terrain where we have more like semi-compulsory properties that we would really, really like to encourage people to use. And this is where I put a link into the chat as well about the European Council recommendation on micro-credentials, where there is, in addition to the very, very compulsory credential properties, what needs to be described about the micro-credential, at least here in Europe, and what are the additional recommended properties that may be useful. And even there, there might be questionable properties like the quality assurance that when it comes to non-formal learning, it might be a little more complicated to describe that or have the same understanding of quality assurance than when you talk about formal education and learning provision from accredited institutions. So this is a fascinating area where we can continue discussing for many more sessions, face-to-face or online.
Ildiko, if I may, would you, where would you position the European digital credentials for learning, like in this context, like between, say, you know, open badges or CLR, one attack, and W3C verifiable credentials. Could you help us find like a way to read and position European digital credentials for learning?
So the European digital credentials for learning came to exist because we have a few policy priorities in Europe where all individuals should have a digital version of their degrees and they should have digital documentation of their skills, knowledge and competences. But because Europe is a big place with lots of countries and very many languages, it's very important that these credentials are interoperable with each other, and an individual who might want to be mobile on the labor market and find a job in a different country, let's say a French person moving to Belgium, their credentials can be read by the Belgian employer and can be understood. So that this is why we have mechanisms and frameworks such as the European and the national qualification frameworks. This is where we can start using those kind of taxonomies like the European Classification of Skills, Competences and Occupations, or the ISCADF field of education taxonomies. So we just wanted to bundle everything we knew of policy and taxonomies and standards and frameworks into one gigantic model that can be used by educators, non-formal learning providers and employers. It's just so that you know, this whole initiative is actually financed by DG Employment. So it's not even DG Education in the European Commission. And this is to support European citizens to be more mobile on the labor market, as well as to pursue a career progression and be able to choose their individual learning paths to be able to learn what they need. So this is where we started. And then, of course, there's digitization and the discovery that learning in smaller chunks is more suitable for an aging population and lifelong learners. And it just happened to converge with other existing initiatives. And of course, what I didn't mention, but it's obvious that we wanted to base our model on something that is stable and is well known and widely in use. And that's the W3C verifiable credential model. So that's our basis. I don't know if it was too fast or too little, too much, but that's the gist.
No, excellent. You actually touched on what I would have asked around the format. So this is a verifiable credentials wrapper, right? And then you have the semantics layer is really based on the European learning model.
Correct.
Okay, excellent. I'm looking at the room. You can't see me, but I can look at all of you in one glance. I wonder if there is any other questions. I do have like a thought, but I'm going to hold that thought for a second and see if anyone else has a... Okay, so let me... use sort of the remainder of our time with this. I had a recent call with DG Employment, Ildiko, as you mentioned, and who's also responsible for ESCO, this the taxonomy of skills, the European skills framework, if you want. And they have an interest in collecting information or doing a bit of a market scan on where ESCO as a skills taxonomy that is machine readable may have been used or integrated into credentialing platforms outside of Europe specifically. So there is an upcoming event. This is toward the end of April that the European Commission is going to host. And specifically, they would like to run a session that showcases the use of ESCO outside of the European Union, particularly, you know, neighboring countries to Europe, but certainly also elsewhere. So this is a call out for anyone here, who might know of, credentialing platforms or even learning management system that have, that are using the ESCO API to connect to the ESCO framework, please reach out. Feel free to send me an email. Likely this will turn into a bit of a survey, but just to trigger that thought of what is coming, I think it would be an interesting example of how, you know, we're going beyond boundaries and skills frameworks, of which there is an abundance of. As a friend, Eric Shepherd, might know better than myself. But we want to be able not only to align skills framework to, you know, proper and quality assured frameworks, but also to be able to map between them and across them. So this inevitably lends into an area in a space where machine readable definition of skills is increasingly more important. And I'm thinking about the work being done in IEEE with their reusable skills definition standard that Eric led, or by the Open Skills Network and the rich skills descriptors or RSDs. CTDL is another way to express a skills framework. So I guess the point here is, regardless of the standard that you use, make sure that you publish skills frameworks in a machine readable way from now on. And then we could, you know, work on bringing those schemas together. And in fact, Chavi, correct me if I'm wrong, CASE is a tool available by YNETech that helps with that.
Yeah, CASE is our open standard related to competency framework and a skill framework. And basically helps institutions and agencies to define to build a graph of competencies. One characteristic of CASE can be associated can have links to another frameworks, such Credential Engine or even ESCO as well, potentially. And also, what Open Batches and CLR also provide is, it's what we call it alignment, which is basically a link to whatever framework. This alignment, supports different types of frameworks. So CASE is obviously one of them, but also Credential Engine. And since, as the framework has a URL and an ID for each item in, within the framework, I would say that any framework will be compatible with Open Batches alignment.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for adding substance to that thought. I think it's very important as we all move toward a skills-based learning or hiring. The availability of skills definitions in machine-readable format is almost an infrastructural issue.
Yeah. Just a quick addition that alignments is not one-to-one, so any credential can have multiple alignments. So it's possible to link your credentials with as many frameworks as you want to. But I think that what's rich in that case is that the standards of these frameworks can be linked together, not via credentials, you know, the framework itself. So an item in an ESCO can be linked to another item in I think it's, I don't remember the name in the US, but I think that there is something published by YACRO related to that. And if you Americans can correct me, that's okay. But I think that the value here is that the frameworks should be aligned by themselves and then just jump between frameworks in a machine-readable way.
I think you might be referring to ONET as the US. And I wonder if, so this, the mapping between different skills frameworks, let's say ESCO to ONET, is that something that is published publicly, or each instance of CASE has specific mapping depending on the need of the institution that is, doing or using CASE?
In CASE, the publisher of the framework is responsible to setting the associations that the framework has to other ones. But it's possible that you can have, as an independent agency, you can have a CASE framework that basically it's a link between two other frameworks. So you can have basically a collection of associations between one framework and another. So ideally, a third party can define this kind of framework.
And if I wanted to look for the specific, say, ONET to ESCO mapping, where would I go? Is that published somewhere? Oh, there you go. Thank you, Phil Barker. Okay, folks.
Other people might know more about that link than I do that I put in. I remember it being presented by ESCO 6 months, a year back. I've seen the mapping. I think it's available from there. It's not linked to CASE or any particular representation of the frameworks in question. It's simply a spreadsheet. At least the version I've seen is simply a spreadsheet showing the mapping.
Thank you, Fiona. Okay, friends, this is great. We reviewed a little bit of what happened last week at the ONET Tech Conference. Look out for people posting thoughts or reflections. We were super happy to have Rob and Chavi particularly join us and share some of the reflections from their point of view. And with that being said, we're almost at the top of the hour. Again, you are the second group today. We normally have twice as many people, so the two sessions were split in half. Look out for an email in the mailing list announcing what time of the day exactly we will meet next week.
as we try to navigate through the shifting time zone issues. Many people have this time slot reserved already, so we all well know that moving a standing invite is challenging. That said, we appreciate you being here and contributing. Yep. Okay, Laura, we will follow up and share the official and try to update the official calendar. That's what we've been trying to do, but we realized, frankly, this morning. So thank you for bearing with us. Okay, everyone, have a great rest of your day, and you'll hear from us likely. See you next week. Thank you, everyone.